Welcome to the iCoder podcast with Ian McDuff.
Greetings and welcome to this next iteration of the podcast on ODR for the International Council on ODR. I am Ian McDuff and I'm coming to you from Wellington, Aotearoa, New Zealand. It's my very great pleasure to speak with my longtime colleague and friend, Graham Ross, who is in the UK, and you'll tell me in a moment whereabouts in the UK you are, Graham, but because yes, you're a fairly peripatetic mobile fellow. So.
Yes, I've just turned my phone off to answer that point. I'm in Greenwich area of London.
Oh, okay, great. Let me say a few words of introduction about you, Graham, and then we can launch into the conversation because you've been so much a part of the ODR scene for the last couple of decades that there's a lot that I would like to hear from you. But in brief, Graham, whom I've known through the ODR circles for some time, is a UK lawyer, mediator for more than a couple of decades. He's a writer, advisor, teacher, developer, presenter on ODR. It's a very active and activist group we have in this ODR circle. You're a board member of the International Council for ODR, chair of its Standards Committee. I'm looking forward to working with you on that too, Graham. You're a fellow of the National Centre for Technology and Dispute Resolution, which is based at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, an official observer to the Council of Europe's European Cyber Justice Network. There's more to be said about that. Former member of the UK Civil Justice Council ODR Advisory Group, which has been particularly busy. Former member of the UK Civil Justice Working Party, or the ADR Working Party. Advisor on ODR to the courts in the UK, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Canada, Australia, Council of Europe and country, and currently contracted to advise the courts in Ukraine. And given the tragic currency of events in Ukraine, there's surely more to be said there. You've been running courses on ODR since 2007, run a pilot for the Ministry of Justice in 2008 on asynchronous online mediation in small claims track courts, vice chair of pre-action protocol committee that produced a PAP for Y2K related claims. That takes us back a couple of decades, doesn't it? You've run three international conferences on ODR, two pilots for eBay on online mediation. Now, there's something here, there's an acronym which you use, which would be worth expanding to, a member of the EU-funded MCOD, that's E-M-C-O-D team, that wrote a book on the cost and quality of ODR. I'd like it if you'd come back to that. Former Vice President for Europe of Modria, and we've already spoken with Colin and Chitu from Modria. Founder of LawTel, a former legal research service. And in the interest of brevity, Colin, because your CV is extraordinary, joint author of the ADR Group's accredited distance learning course in ODR. If I can come to the two or three topics which you identified were live for you, Graham, and we'll pick up other things that have come out through your CV. Can you say something about the European Cyber Justice Network, which is connected to, I understand, 46 member countries of the Council of Europe, and you're an observer of that. So what is the Cyber Justice Network? What's the work involved?
Okay, so the European Cyber Justice Network, first of all, it's something very important on ODR for what they do. It's born out of the Council of Europe. Council of Europe, as you correctly said, has 46 member countries and I think six observer countries, including USA and I think Australia as well. But mainly the 46 member countries, and they were very recently 47 member countries, but a very large one towards the east of Europe was thrown out for obvious reasons. The Council of Europe was created at the end of the Second World War to provide some structure to help avoid the terrible things that happened in the first half of the 20th century in Europe. It's responsible for specifically the European Convention of Human Rights, so it's the cornerstone of human rights throughout Europe. The UK is a member, so not to be confused with the European Union, which is
of course
entirely different, 26 countries that the UK sadly left. We won't get into the politics, but yes. it's a totally different organisation, and it's all about human rights. And I was invited a few years back to a meeting of their Law and Human Rights Committee held in Madrid to give some evidence of what ODR is, because they wanted to look at what they were hearing about ODR and to specifically see whether there are any threats to human rights, whether somehow these systems are removing de facto the ability of people to take cases out in the courts. I'm pleased to say that the overall opinion, having researched it, was that ODR should be encouraged, whilst there were caveats, such as systems should not give advantage to one party simply because that party was using that system all day and every day, whereas the other party was using it for the one and only time. Ideas like that came out of it, and in fact gave a resolution that all 46 member countries should actively promote the development and application and use of systems of online dispute resolution within their justice systems. A number of organizations were born out of it, firstly the European Committee on Legal Cooperation, and that's an interesting one because that was the one that created the Cyber Justice Network. I made a mistake. Stop there. Stop there, Colin. 3, 2, 1. There was also born the European Commission for the Efficiency of Justice, and that created in 2019 a working group on cyber justice and artificial intelligence in the justice systems. And last year, 21, the Cyber Justice, European Cyber Justice Network was launched. And it's made up of not just the 46 member countries and observer countries, together with other observers, including myself. So I'm an official observer, able to attend and speak at meetings on behalf of ICODA, the International Council on Online Dispute Resolution. But it's made up of the ministers of justice of all these member countries. So it's a wonderful, wonderful organization to help coordinate now the research and further developments into the application of online technology generally into the justice system. And it has produced some interesting work, such as guidelines on ODR.
Those are merely guidelines. Have they been adopted in any more tangible way in any of the member states?
Can you just repeat that question, please, Ian?
I was just wondering whether the guidelines which you mentioned and emphasised that they are guidelines, whether they had been adopted in a more tangible legislative way by any of the member states.
Well, yes, they have been adopted last year, and I can give a link, a tiny URL link, which if you're familiar with tiny URL, when listening, tinyurl.com/COE guidelines. That's an easy one.
Okay, super. Yep.
And you will get to see those 43 guidelines. They're not mandatory. They're not law such. But if you're a member of the Council of Europe, these ought to be followed in order to be compatible with human rights generally.
Okay. Right. So your work there is as observer, and I'm happy to say representing ICODA as an observer.
Yes, and we had our AGM last week, which I will be reporting on to my colleagues and yourself on the board.
Sure. Okay. Well, thanks for that, and useful also for many listening to clarify, as you did, the difference between the Council of Europe and the EU. because the EU has also had its initiatives on mediation and ODR, which, and no doubt they overlap. Thank you. Can I also pick up something else?
That's a good point. Yes, if I can just cut in there, that's a good point. As you know, there has been legislation, actual legislation from the Council from the European Union in respect to dispute resolution, online dispute resolution in consumer disputes. These no longer apply to the United Kingdom, although, but they were not a perfect fix. I've talked about the problems with the EU regulations, but essentially the problem was that they do require traders in the member countries with websites to have links to an EU ODR portal. Platform. It doesn't do it. When people have a complaint about a consumer product, they can click a link and fill out the details, and that will be passed to a dispute resolution, an ADR organization operating online and approved by the local authority set up in that country to regulate those matters in consumer affairs, and then reach out to the trader and invite them into a system of ODR. The weakness in that law was that, and no doubt this was following lobbying from the retail industry, although the retailer had to notify and assist the consumer to access an ODR service, the retailer could simply turn around and refuse to participate. So the actual participation in ODR for dispute was not mandatory. And that's meant that this is a law that's very little adhered to these days, which is sad.
So there's clearly across the board in the ODR area, there's some way to go before ODR systems parallel the strengths and operability of legal systems. But we're making good progress. But by the way, just on your point also, when you briefly summarise the process, people might want to go back two podcasts to my conversation with Pablo Cortes, who of course is our colleague working in the area of consumer protection at ODR, because he discussed that in some detail in that podcast, which was about 6 weeks ago as of the time of this recording. Super. Yes. Can I pick up another element that comes up in my brief outline of your CV? The MCOD project, and we've got a web link, www.emcod.net, which listeners can pick up. But what is it? What does it do? What's your role in MCOD?
Okay. It doesn't have it's not operational now. This was a research group pulled together and funded by the European Union to investigate, as it says, the costs of online dispute resolution and the quality of it, and how can you ensure good quality for it. So we were a group, we met about half a dozen times, we produced a user exit survey. Very important in introducing any systems of ODR to make sure that people have an opportunity, not only when they finish their, when the process is finished, try to find out what their experience of it was. And we're not talking about the usual when you buy something, can you please provide a review and how many stars would you give it? Something much more in depth. I think there's over 35 questions in the main questionnaire. And the idea was to gather data on a continuing basis and to with a view to that producing lessons to feed back into further development of these systems. Now that was has been published in a book which you can obtain through that tiny URL link you've just mentioned. And in that is the actual exit survey, which I heartily recommend anybody involved providing an ODR service to use that or adaptation of that. And that it's now finished now, our work. We did our work. We produced the book. I wrote one of the chapters on Europe, of course, as one would expect from my role. But it is sad to say that I'm not aware that this survey has been operating. In fact, at the time, we did pay to have it put online. And I think there was talk that this would be freely available to anybody. If anybody's interested, I'm happy to see if I can link them to it. But like many things in Europe, and I'm not by no means a critic of Europe, I was not a Brexiteer. I think it was an absolute act of madness to leave the biggest trading network. But there we are. It hasn't helped.
Yeah, but that becomes more apparent by the day, but let's not get me a good track.
It certainly hasn't our current situation. With a revolving door into 10 Downing Street. I'm not quite sure when my turn to be Prime Minister will come about, but it won't be long.
Oh, give it a couple of weeks, Graham.
I'll have to reject it. But the like many things in Europe, however, this one criticism they have, they fund things, they fund research projects, and there's no pickup after it. There was many years ago, the e-arbitration project. This is probably going back almost 20 years. Something like €750,000 was spent on developing an online arbitration system. It was partly done, and then the participating parties didn't agree and were to take it onwards. And it's just nothing has therefore come out of it. There's nothing benefiting from it. But there we go. There's a lot of, I'm sure a lot of people have similar stories to say.
No doubt. But if people want access to that report, and particularly to the questionnaire, that tiny URL with the www.emcod.net will lead them to the research.
Yes.
You're saying. Super. Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's extraordinary that you and others have been involved in this extraordinary amount of research on standards and practice and developments in ODR, and a lot of it seems to just vanish into the ether, doesn't it? And because there's a lack of coherence and coordination
and particularly we're talking about the guidelines, which are effectively standards, and the 43 of them that the Council of Europe have produced. Of course, we have our ICODA guidelines, and there are many other standards that have been pulled together by private and public organisations. And a key role, as I see it, of ICODA is to be a location to coordinate these. I mean, a lot of these standards obviously are very similar, reflect the same main fundamental issues. It is always useful to look at other people's standards and see where we can take and borrow from, and likewise where we can offer the filling of certain gaps to others. So it is very important for ODR that this work in standards setting is being done. There is a need for some globally accepted international standard, and I could see that as part of the work of ICODA.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is a conversation to which we might have to return over the course of the next few months as the work of the committee that you're now chairing, the ICODA Committee on Standards, again, your point too is, given the global and cross-border reach of ODR, the very nature of it means that it needs to be coordination between and across jurisdictions. But the barriers are still there.
The cross-border point, there was UNCITRAL has produced, what do they call it? It wasn't guidelines, but it was cross-border. It was to applying to cross-border trading disputes.
Yeah. Well, you're not thinking of the Singapore Convention. But that's implementation and mediation agreements. No,
UNCTAD, the United Nations Commission for International Trade Law, had a number of meetings in Geneva and New York. Sorry, not Geneva. Anyway, and produced this note at the end of it. It wasn't on specifically on online dispute resolution for the resolution of international trade disputes. And again, that's just another one organization focusing on standards to enable these systems to develop and to serve the public to the best they can.
Can we move on to this sort of two linked topics in the information that you provided earlier, both of which relate to Ukraine? The first is the Smart Settle Infinity platform, which you've been involved with for some time, and you've referred to using Smart Settle to look at a sample ceasefire negotiation in the case of Ukraine. But can you say something about Smart Settle generically, because you've used that extensively, and then how you see that might apply to intense conflicts such as Ukraine?
Yes. So to people, particularly mediators, who rejoiced in using Zoom to enable their practices to continue during the pandemic, and who, when people were getting felt confident enough to get back to sitting in the same room as each other, expressed great relief that Zoom was over and they don't need to go back to ODR. I say ODR is a lot more than simply a video web conferencing facilities, or indeed case management tools, or other forms of ODR. And the really exciting area is the space that Smart Settle inhabit, and that is where ODR is about that third final word, resolution. So this is where we're talking not about a place to have conversations or to exchange documents or to e-filing or whatever. This is where software, forms of AI, which I refer to as augmented intelligence rather than artificial, which still requires skilled professionals to be involved and use it, is where these tools can actually make it easier and quicker for the parties to come to resolution. So they have two main products: Smart Settle One, which is called, contradiction of terms it may sound like, a visual blind bidding system, but that means that offers can be made openly by each party to the other. And this is, by the way, only relevant where the dispute is about simply a number. Usually that number is a sum of money. And there are no other side issues about how many months would it be paid, or how much we paid to begin with, you know, just how much will be paid. And the important element is the blind bidding element, where you don't get to see the bids of the other party. And what this does is enables the parties to be more active at making greater effort to try and resolve that than they can do or do when they're having to do it openly. As we know, people very rarely go to their bottom lines when they're openly negotiating. They will often say, I offer you this and that is my final offer. And there's almost there's what they call the negotiation dance, where there's a lot of psychology involved in people think they're controlling how the psychology of negotiation takes place. And they're trying to give the impression that they're not prepared to pay more, whereas in reality they are, if it settles the case. This enables the parties to be much more adventurous. And of course, if the bids overlap each other, in which case there's a zone of agreement there, any number within that overlap is acceptable to both parties by definition, or get close enough that the system can nudge them into reaching agreement, is going to be much more productive than open. And one of the things I see very important is for, let's say, insurance companies that may have to pay on behalf of a driver in a car accident where there's no doubt he was at fault. I mean, maybe he drove out of a side road into the front of the car. What the insurance company wants to do is to get this settled as quickly as possible and not go into court, whereas often the claimant's lawyers is wanting to get that into court for reasons I don't need to go into in this podcast. Oh. But and one of the things with a blind system is the insurers can offer high very early when the costs are negligible, rather than offering low to start with and then ending up having to pay legal costs, which makes the total what they eventually pay plus costs much more than what they might have paid had they paid a little bit more to the claimant very early on and paid virtually nothing in legal costs because it's settled early. Now, they don't do that in open bidding because if they bid high first, they're sending a message to the other side that then it's going to settle it even more because people are used to bidding low to begin with and replacing it with a higher bid. But if you do it, if you have the facility of blind, you could bid high early. If it's accepted, great. If not, you can reduce it. So that's what Smart Settle One is. Smart Settle Infinity is for more complicated matters where you're trying to settle a package. So let's say, I mean, if you go to seeyououtofcourt.com, one of my sites, you get to see a little video of using both One and Smart Settle in, say, a family law case. But let's take, for example, an employment case, employment dismissal, where the issues are the amount of compensation and also whether there is a bar out for working in that industry. There might be one in the employment contract, but it doesn't necessarily that it has to be followed if the employer is happy for it not to be followed. What Smart Settle Infinity does is it finds out, because it does need to be operated by a skilled mediator, negotiator, lawyer, who learns from speaking to each party and the parties, what is the degree of importance and preference they have to each of the elements of a settlement, the conditions to the settlement. And it provides a space where they can put packages together and the system learns. So it's a learning software. The system learns the values and interests of each party comparatively on each of the elements of a settlement package, assesses that, gives it a number to enable people to comparatively compare, and allows the parties at any stage to submit a package offer to the other party. At any stage, if the same package is accepted by both parties, it will declare a settlement. But there's an important point here. When somebody puts forward a package, they have a choice of either having it identified as coming from them, as an offer coming from them, or they can have it masquerade as having been assessed and created by the AI in the machine. And it's because the machine gets to understand not only the interests of each part one party, of both parties, that neither party has that benefit. They don't know what the other party is thinking. The machine does. And the machine can come up with its own suggestions. So just like in the Smart Settle One, you can see the offer. You know who is making the offer, but you can't see what the offer is. And the Smart Settle Infinity, you can see the offer, the package, but you don't know if it's coming from the other party or the mediator or a lawyer or, importantly, the machine. Now, going back to a conference I held in Liverpool on ODR, when was it? 2018, I think. Smart Settle did an example and live demonstration of using Smart Settle Infinity for a very complicated case. And we thought, well, how about negotiating Brexit? And deputy vice chair for 5 years of the European Parliament came along and assisted us, and Diana Wallace. And within about hours involving the whole audience, they were able to come to a settlement through, if you like, artificial intelligence rather than political intelligence. And but for the last International Forum on Online Dispute Resolution held in Dublin last May, they decided to also do a complicated one and chose a ceasefire in Ukraine. And once again, that was resolved live during the conference itself. There is on Smart Settle's site, or I will send a link, a page in which they show the workings of the application of Smart Settle Infinity to a Ukrainian ceasefire. Plus, it looks, you've got separate videos showing the operation of the settlement from both perspectives, Russian perspective and the Ukrainian perspective. So it's worth having a look at that. And it's just really sure, showing the power of that sort of type of software. And I should finally add, by the way, I've bored everybody enough already with that. There's no settlement it imposed on people. In either of these systems, they're always based on mutual agreement of both parties. It's the skill of these tools that help people reach agreement that they otherwise might not be able to do. I mentioned that both parties click to accept the same package. It declares a baseline agreement, but it doesn't stop there. What Infinity would do, because of its knowledge, both of what's been fed into it as to the comparative preferences of the parties in each issue, plus what it learns from the way the parties have put packages together, which is also very revealing, they then see if there's any value left on the table. And if there is, they will offer an improved package from the one.
Parties can accept.
It was at some length, but
It's useful, very useful to have that, because my interest at the end there was the point at which the parties can effectively declare it to be over, because at that point they will recognize that an agreement has been reached, either through using the artificial intelligence or through the intervention of the parties themselves. And I like the idea that the Smart Settle can also determine whether there is more value to be added, which is something we do in mediation anyways. We've got an agreement, but is there ways in which we can now make this even better? So with something like Brexit or with the Ukrainian case, who is involved in determining what value is given to each of the components of A dispute and B a potential resolution? Parties may not agree on what the issues are, of course. And walk me through how we arrive at the weighting and the valuing of issues through Smart Settle.
Yes. Well, they have a team of advisors and consultants who plowed through a mass of published papers on these negotiations from various sources. They're not saying, here we are, this is a settlement that will be accepted, because there was no direct contact, obviously, with any of the governments concerned or the actual negotiators.
Right.
But the people who've read a lot of the papers, there's quite a considerable number of papers being published about the negotiation and about where these interests are. This was being shown purely to demonstrate the power of Smart Settle Infinity. In other words, to answer the question, can it deal with complex multi-party, multi-issue? And yes, it can. And therefore, it's just using it to show its fullest power. But that power can equally be used for more mundane disputes.
Some of the work you're doing, you've mentioned you're actually working with the courts in Ukraine. Can you say a bit more?
It's an entirely separate matter. I happened in 2017, I was invited to go over to Kyiv to address a conference on ODR. They were then had begun to look at improving the court system, which had and be careful how I choose my words here, still had many characteristics of that they had from the former Soviet Union days.
Sure.
I was more recently, in January of this year, was approached again by, I should say, USAID, which is the US government's international aid project, who had taken on the role of trying to assist the country in improving its justice system, and asked me if I could come back and do some more work, because they'd already started some initial work in ODR with a solution, an early stage solution finder approach. And so I accepted that contract to investigate and provide a report, which I'm finishing off this week, I should add, present this week, on what I feel could be done, the next steps to take the courts forward. So it's all about, there is the war, and it's about not just, we know about the terrible, terrible situation, where they're hopefully winning that war eventually, but it's also about winning the peace. It's all about it's also about Ukraine itself and the core element of its justice system for its future. So I'm very proud and honored to be invited to do this. And but of course, because of the Russian invasion that came shortly after I was invited to do some more work, I've had to do it all online. And it's I've been having meetings with judges and mediators and others, and it's a strange experience, of course, that they're talking to me in as one would have a Zoom meetings like we're having now, and they have to keep remembering terrible circumstances in which they're living.
It's quite surreal, really, isn't it? That in some senses, a bit of normal life continues while it's anything other than normal. For people there. Well, Graham, I mean, we could continue, because I mean you have been so much involved in the development of what you've very clearly properly called ODR, and I think it's an important point to emphasise, as you did before, that for many, particularly during the pandemic, ODR was a matter of dressing the top up in business attire and turning on Zoom. And but in a way, that also has warmed a number of people up to the possibility of greater use of technology. But the important point you've made also is that ODR, as it is developing and as you've been instrumental in developing along with many of our colleagues, is much more aligned to the use of technology to assist in the decision-making and the resolution process. And that's something that you and others in conversation around our ODR table have sought to make clear. Are you optimistic? And let me put it differently. Your expectation of the next, let's say, even 5 years of where you see ODR in the UK or parts of Europe with which you're familiar, how do you see it playing out in the next few years?
Well, for 20 years now, many of us in ODR, come January, would always be firmly of the belief that this was a year when ODR was going to take off and take over the world.
Of course.
Very slow for those of us who've been in, and yourself included, of course, for quite a number of years to this. But of course, COVID did provide an albeit unwanted trigger point to at least have the acronym known. The problem now is getting people to understand it's not just Zoom. And ODR is not over. And you know, people need to understand the difference in digitization and digitalization. Zoom is digitization. Because what that is doing is it's allowing an offline process to be conducted online, But the process is still the same. The mediators mediating online through synchronous live video feeds will still carry on as mediators and follow when, you know, if they have a dual caucusing sessions and generals and whatever approach they have, it hasn't changed. And also e-filing, document management, that's just doing the same thing that you do without technology, but doing it more conveniently. It's not changing, increasing, or introducing a new process. Digitalization goes further. It's where you actually give the opportunity to create and do create a variation on the whole process that is an improvement and helps. And certainly if that area is mediation or is helping parties to reach an agreement without the anxiety, cost, and delay of the courts, and in the same time reducing the burden on justice ministries around the world in running the courts, that has to be the real direction of future. And well, it's not January, it will be soon, and no doubt I'll be saying 2023 is the year for ODR.
But it's
a big snowball's pushing uphill.
Oh yeah, but we have to remain optimistic, at least in that respect. But on that, I like the distinction between digitization and digitalization, although it's sometimes quite hard to say. But on that conclusion, that point, this is where we will need to wrap. And thank you so much for your time, and appreciate your time and expertise, because your experiences. Significant both in the UK and well, not just across the water in Europe, but globally. So thank you for taking the time to join us from this podcast. Okay. And look forward to catching up with you again very soon in real life, I hope.
Thank you. And thank you, Ian, for inviting me and for all the work and contributions you're making to the ODR scene as well from your part of the world.
Happy to have the colleagues with whom to do so. Take care and farewell from this part of the world.
This podcast has been brought to you by ICODER, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about ICODER or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.